Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Glenn et al. Titled, Cardiac Steatosis Potentiates Angiotensin II Effects in the Heart. This article published online December 5th, 2014. My guests today are Associate Editor AJ Shah, Lead Author Dennis Glenn, and Content Expert Hemal Patel. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Dennis. Hi, Hemal. Dennis, if I can start by asking you just to sum up for our listeners the key points of your article in a couple of sentences.
Sure. What we were trying to look at was what the effect of angiotensin II as a proxy for hypertension would be in an isolated model of cardiac steatosis. And so what we did was to infuse angiotensin II into mice and then look at the hearts in both the transgenic model of steatosis and in the controls. What we found was that the effect of angiotensin, which increased blood pressure to a similar level in both the controls and transgenic mice, had a much bigger effect on fibrosis and cardiac function in the steatotic hearts.
For me, the thing that's really interesting is cardiac steatosis, basically fatty heart, right? Fatty heart, and how the fatty heart responds to other stimuli, for example, hypertension. So what do you think is the mechanism of what you found? What is it about the fatty heart that makes it more sensitive to, in this case, angiotensin?
In our model, the fatty heart is in isolation. So we don't have obesity or diabetes. And so I think we can narrow down the mechanism to something that's occurring within the myocyte. And it's interesting that when you provide angiotensin, we get this big effect in fibrosis and in heart function. And presumably, the accumulation of lipids or the alteration of the lipid profile makes that myocyte more sensitive to the effects of angiotensin. We looked at a couple of different possibilities. One, looking at reactive oxygen species, and it looks like the ability of the steatotic heart to handle reactive oxygen is different than in the normal heart. In addition, we also looked at the response to TGF-beta and how the TGF-beta system and fibrosis was operating in the steatotic heart. And that also seemed to be playing a role there.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it still begs the question, what is the link between the increased triglyceride accumulation in the heart and then the subsequent signaling that you just mentioned with ROS and TGF-beta? Hemal, your thoughts on the story and the mechanism?
So what I found very striking in the paper is the fibrotic response with Ang2, and it's typically an agent we use to create fibrosis in the heart. And so this being a myocyte-specific transgenic that creates this steatosis in the myocyte itself, it's sort of interesting. You talk in the paper about this double hit model, and I think a lot of diseases, we need a double hit to see a cardiac pathology that develops. But it's interesting that there may be sort of a communicative response between the fibroblast and the myocyte that may dictate some of this mechanistic endpoint.
I mean, one thing that for me was quite interesting was you did this lipidomic analysis, and I think you found that 70% maybe of the lipid metabolites that you measured were different between your experimental group and your control group, even before you gave the angiotensin II. I mean, do you think that this huge change in lipid composition might alter receptor density or maybe the way in which angiotensin receptor signals downstream of activation?
I think it's entirely possible. You have to imagine that there are a number of different signaling pathways which could be affected and changing receptor density or signaling molecules, which then might act in a paracrine fashion to the fibroblast.
So one of the key lipids that you did see changed in the transgenic in response to angiotensin was ceramide. Ceramide has sort of a checkered past in terms of toxicity effects in a variety of cell systems. And so my laboratory studies caveolar microdomains. And there's been a lot of work in the vascular literature that suggests that ceramide may sort of be born from the caveolar microdomain and may set up this sort of negative feedback system of toxicity within a cell. So that would be sort of an interesting area to look at. The other thing that would be very interesting is what happens to these animals when you actually put them on an exogenous fat diet. So creating sort of potentially a triple hit in this setting, you know, creating a diabetic phenotype in addition to Ange2 with this genetic background. I was looking through, you know, I was reading a recent AJP Heart paper. Keith Jones was the senior author on this paper. And it's an interesting idea that we've been sort of toying around with in our lab as well. And the title is Acute High-Fat Diet Results in Cardioprotection. That the sense that, you know, one of the major things that happens in the myocardium in response to an outside stressor is the membrane gets perturbed. And as Ajay said, it's the major part of the membrane is a lipid composition. And this lipid is very necessary for creating homeostatic function. And hyperloading that membrane with cholesterol, which creates these lipid rafts and caveolar microdomains, may be a protective stimulus.
You know, Hemal, you raise the translational aspect of this, and I think that's always interesting with these papers. So if we sort of turn from the mouse study and try and imagine how this might work in patients, when you look at the history of the fatty heart, you know, it turns out that in the 18th century, physicians used to diagnose core adiposum, and they used to say that people died of a fatty heart. And then we learned about coronary disease, and all this, the idea that the heart might get fatty deposition kind of went out of fashion. But now it seems to be coming back into fashion, and we are more aware that this might be a real problem. So my question to both of you is, what do we know about fatty deposition in the heart compared to other organs? Is there an easy way in a patient to identify which patients are more likely to have this kind of problem?
Well, it has been studied in patients, and probably the most convenient and non-invasive way to do that is by MRI. And there's been studies which have shown that in patients with diabetes and obesity, the amount of fat, which you can see by MRI in the heart, is increased. And it appears that this precedes overt heart dysfunction, and so may be a precursor to eventual systolic dysfunction in patients.
But if a patient has fatty liver, for example, are they more likely to have cardiac steatosis?
I think that in the papers by McGavick et al., they looked at whether that correlated to obesity as well as elevated lipid levels in the blood, and I believe fatty liver as well. And it didn't correlate perfectly well with those other markers. You know, we looked at mice out to a year, and they did develop both fibrosis and reduction in systolic function.
And is that correctable with AT1 receptor antagonists?
That's not something we tried without any other stimulus.
Okay. So, Hemal, finally, what do you think are future directions in this area?
One of the things we hit on was this translatability. And I think the model that Dennis is sort of proposing here may be a step forward, where you have multiple clinical scenarios that a patient would come in with. The diabetic's going to have issues with hypertension. Their angiotensin levels are going to be, you know, very different from a normal individual. And to move model species along the path of really replicating the clinical setting is really going to push us forward in terms of designing optimal therapeutics. The other alternative from a therapeutic standpoint would be to come in with ways of regulating fatty acid transporters and those kinds of things. The caveat there then becomes, you know, the heart is primarily a fat-using, burning organ. And so how do you get the dichotomy between the lipids that you need in the myocardium versus the ones you don't really want to accumulate?
It's clear that it's a fascinating area, an important area, and one close to our hearts, shall we say. So thank you both very much indeed for an interesting discussion. Thank you, Dennis, on a great paper. And thank you all for listening.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.